Welcome to Pod Nuts and Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 214, Tool Bag. I am your host, Jeff Halsh. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Let me introduce the co-host. We have Chris Carruthers from the Remote Support Tech Team. How are you doing, Chris?
I am having a wonderful almost holiday. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing excellent. And also joining us, Paco LeBron from Prodigy Techs. How you doing, Paco?
As always, better than good, better than most.
Awesome, man. And we have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How you doing, John?
Jeff, I'm great. Nose hairs clipped, squeaky chair fixed, mic drop ready. Let's roll.
And also Kurt Soderquist from PC Doctor. Kurt, how you doing?
I am doing awesome. How are you?
I am doing excellent. Great to have you all on the show. Well, the reason we are going to basically do this show, this is the last show of the year, and we'll get into that in a minute. But this is going to be the tool bag show. Not only did we get a bunch of emails that talk about different tools that people use and why they use them, but we're also going to talk about how we use some of these tools. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and skip the tips and tricks this week, and we're going to get into it because we've got a lot of emails to go through. And then I want to get your guys' take here on if you use that tool and maybe different ways that you use it than what we've gotten in our email. So let's go ahead and start with that. Okay. Email number one. All right. This is from Michael Mary. Said, I have some tools that I want to mention. They revolve around backups. Backup, backup, backup. The first is Macrium Reflect. I use this anytime I work on a computer. Step one in my process is to get an image of the machine. It gives me a safety net to where if I completely mess things up, I can go back to my starting point. It also allows me to have data if the hard drive fails while I'm working on it, because we know that that would never happen. I am also playing with ESIS to do backup for the same thing. And he sent me a couple links, and we'll make sure those are in the show notes. So does anybody use Macrium Reflect?
I have a client that uses
it. I do use the ESIS tools. Sorry, Chris.
No. Go ahead, Chris.
I have a client that uses it. Works out really well as long as they remember to plug in the external hard drive.
Okay. Gotcha. Now, as far as imaging, using it for image tools or anything like that, because I've never used Macrium, so I'm not sure exactly how it works.
It's the same as any other imaging tool. I mean, I used it many years ago, like 10 plus years ago, but I've heard they've obviously improved a lot of stuff and things like that.
Yeah, there's been some pretty big improvements. I mean, free is still free, right? So, you know, don't expect it to restore to a different size partition. But, you know, if you're just looking to get the image done so that you can put it on the same size drive or a larger drive, it's good.
So what are you guys using for imaging?
I personally use Acronis. Mm-hmm. If I'm doing an image.
Yeah.
Or sometimes Reclaim Me Pro, depending on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
We got two Acronis, three Acronis. Paco?
I use the ESIS tools. If it's just a regular image, if it's like a data recovery, I'll do RStudio.
If given the choice, though, like if I'm going to an SSD, I'll always buy the Samsung SSDs so I can use the transfer tool. Because honestly, I haven't seen anything as smooth as the Samsung SSD transfer tool. It's just, you know, a shame that they coded it so it only works with their stuff.
Now, so, is that their own program, Chris, or is that made by another company?
That is a good question, actually. I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, because I like using Acronis or Acronis, however you want to pronounce it. I use that one because when we were selling SSDs, we were selling the Crucials, and Crucials came with the Acronis 15 or whatever version it was. So it was a free key for people to have it if they had to make that seamless transfer. But I seem to use that. That seems to work pretty good for me. I never have much issues unless there's a lot of bad sectors, and then it's going to fail. So,
yeah, I think
I kind of use an off-the-radar tool by a company called Terabyte Unlimited.
Okay.
I have a couple of packages. One's called Image for Linux, Image for DOS, Image for Windows. So it does a lot of the same things. Great thing about that is it's extremely flexible and extremely inexpensive. So I can do a Linux image and then do a bare metal restore to a different operating system, or I can do an image from Windows and then restore it somewhere else using a different tool, and I can do BMR and I can do all that within that. So it's Terabyte Unlimited.
Cool.
Who would have thought I'd be the weird one?
And what's BMR?
bare metal, restore slash recovery.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Okay. So any other tools as far as the backups that we haven't talked about yet that anybody uses that's different than, I think we're a lot of us are using the same things. Now, question though, here's the better question. How many people are taking their hard drives from a customer when they get them in and making that backup immediately before they ever work on a machine, whether it be a virus removal or whatever?
I'm doing it as of 2 weeks ago after a scare I had. So,
And what was the scare, Paco?
I only do it if I have something suspect, if I think there's a possibility I might not get the data back, or if I thought that maybe there was a problem with the hardware, but it is not something I do every time I see a machine.
Okay. Paco?
I'll try and be brief. Essentially, I was using a courier service to drop off a laptop from my residence to my virtual office, and it was delivered to the wrong address downtown, but signed as if it was delivered. So it took me about 3 hours to figure out where it went. Now, obviously, insurances and all that stuff is in place, but it's more of the hassle and just all around, where is this guy's laptop? If we can't find this laptop, this guy's going to lose his mind. And I think this client was an insurance agent at one point. So, you know, who knows if there was any type of secure data that was on there. So that was a whole big old thing. So ever since then, I image every single laptop I have in the event of this situation happened again and we had to restore data. That's what I'm doing now.
Okay. So yours is more of a situation where you could have, in transferring from the laptop from point A to point B, laptop could have been given to the wrong person, lost, whatever. So that's why you're backing up, but not necessarily because you think that while you're working on it, something might go wrong and you have to have that backup data.
Yeah, no, okay. So I guess we can kind of go into, unless you're going to keep reading emails, is what we do for diagnostics when our first process of when a laptop comes in, right? So the first thing I do when a laptop comes in, it gets a hardware test off the bat.
Okay.
Because I've learned over time and time again, and it's actually, I owe this to Chris when he first started coming onto the show, is doing hardware tests, although may seem like you're giving up 30 extra minutes, in reality, it may be saving you time in the long run, because if you spend 3 to 4 or 5, 6 hours, however your virus removal or whatever process it may be, if you detected that there was a bad hard drive in the beginning, you're saving yourself so much more time because now you're not duplicating your efforts, or now you have a better assessment of what to do with that particular laptop.
Yeah. And really, I mean, if you're using something like TechUSB to automate the hardware tests in the first place, you know, that test can easily be running while you're working on something else. So you're not really losing any time there, but you're going to save yourself a lot of time if it turns out that there's a hard drive problem or, you know, a memory problem and you're trying to figure out, you know, is this a virus, right? Why would you spend all that for a problem when it turned out it's a RAM?
Right. Okay.
Instead of a full image, would it be just a good idea just maybe to grab a FABS?
That's what I do.
So you know you have the raw data?
Yeah.
I mean, so at least you're not saying I don't know where your pictures are. Something like that.
You can go both ways on that. The only thing is that another situation that I had is not necessarily a machine that came in, but a client. And I think, John, me and you talked about this earlier this week, where if you're only focusing on file copies or file backups, and let's say they have a SAS application, or not a SAS application, a custom SQL application that has SQL databases, if it's one machine that has a domain controller and all this stuff as a single point of failure, and if it goes down, you know, yeah, you have your files, but for everything else that could have had an image, you would have made your time a lot more useful if those backups were in place.
Right.
Being image or otherwise.
Yeah. For you, like business, I can see making images, but when it's like residential, just regular backup of their files and documents and stuff is good enough for me. Businesses, yeah, I'll make a backup for the image, but that's about it. And I use Shadow Protect.
Okay.
So
I think a lot of time, the reason people do images, or the best practices of doing an image before you start working on it, is so that if there's something that's hidden in the system, it's in the C drive, but it's not in the documents folder or in a weird spot, that they have all the data. It's not as prevalent anymore, but back in the day, QuickBooks used to put their file in some weird folder on a C drive somewhere where it wasn't normal. Now, pretty much in Outlook with their PST files was the same way. Now, everything seems like it's pointing to the documents folder, but not always.
The only assuming that the user doesn't change it.
Yep.
Right.
Well, and they were assuming the user's smart. So, no, I don't think that happens.
Oh, come on. Let's not put those two things in the same pocket.
And the only difference of opinion I have on residential is sometimes you may not know if a residential computer that was dropped off, you know, in your business, although it may be a residential or it's a residence, they may be a home business that you may not have known of. You know, they may be a graphic designer or, you know, so forth and so on. Yeah, all the great file-based information is taken care of. However, you know, if they have any custom programs, perfect example, graphic designers, they're using, you know, Photoshops and, you know, all these are very expensive programs. And if they don't have those keys because they bought it during college or something of that nature, you might be putting yourself in a bad spot as well. Right. So that's another thing that's always you got to take into consideration as far as another scenario on why you should image.
Okay.
Right. Right. And like you said, you know, that's actually, I made it a habit a long time ago, right? I started asking people when they come in and they go, yeah, I use this computer at home. And I'll say, okay, is it business or residential? You know, because I do have a lot of small businesses that run out of their home. So I want to make sure if I have to back it up the right way. But most of them, the majority, no, it's just residential. And then I make a mark it on my ticket because I want to make sure I have all the right, correct information before I start doing it.
So, gotcha. But that's a very good point you made. I think that may make a modification on our invoice forms. Just, hey, is this laptop being used for business or personal purposes, right?
Right, right.
So that way when they sign it, they kind of disclose that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, my forms, it just means I'm not responsible for anything. So it doesn't matter what happens. So I cover all aspects of it. Anyways, let's move on. Second part of Michael's email, he's still talking about backup. He said, the second software I use is iDrive. I opted for this online backup service over others like Carbonite for a couple of reasons. iDrive does not follow the standard 30 to 60 day retention. If you keep their files in a backup, you can keep your files in the backup indefinitely. If you want a file removed from your backups, you need to remove it yourself. They have also started to implement disk image backup for their business class level of service, and that's iDrive.com. We'll also have a link for that in the show notes. I've heard a lot of good things about iDrive. I've never used it.
Me neither, but same as like you. I've heard a lot of good things about it as well.
So I might have to check it out one day. I haven't
used it either.
Okay. iDrive.com. I've heard of, I mean, it's for years I've heard about this service and people have liked it. So thank you, Michael. Appreciate the email. All right. This is from, let's see, who's it from? Nick McCormick. Hello, Jeff and everybody in the Computer Repair Podcast. There are some tools I use at work that help me a lot. One, Snappy Driver Installer, or SDI for short. I like to use this application for installing drivers on a fresh installation of Windows on OEM PCs, Asus, HP, Dell, Lenovo, etc. It saves the hassle and time of finding the drivers on the manufacturer's website, so I can get to working on another machine while SDI can install drivers on the freshly installed PC. Though if said machine has a video card or a special device that requires additional software, at that point I will go to AMD or NVIDIA's website, depending on what the video card that is installed or the manufacturer's website, if it's a special device requiring software developed by the manufacturer. Now, I've used SDI, and it works fine. My go-to has always been driver packs. And there's a couple reasons for that. Number one, I have it's probably 18 gigs or something like that on a USB thumbstick. And I also put a smaller version with just like NIC drivers and stuff like that on a CD. Yes, not a DVD, on a CD. So you can put it on either. But every once in a while, I will get a machine that for whatever reason, I can't run anything from a USB. So I want to have that drive backup. It's not as much anymore, but have you guys used SDI before?
I'm in the middle.
I've tried a little bit. I had all sorts of trouble with it, so I kind of abandoned it. I've used Driver Max in the past, which is okay. IOBit has a software package that does that too that I've used, but after you use it, then you got to go back and uninstall all the adware. So,
Okay.
You know, both of those two, Driver Max leaves a little crapware behind too, but.
Gotcha.
I've used, so I'm still using 3DP, 3DP Net and 3DP Chip, which I heard actually on one of the shows many years ago.
Okay.
But lately they've been bundling adware on it. And so if you're just not careful by reading and unchecking some of those things, you'll install the adware. Now, essentially, so I've been in between trying to find a better solution because of that. But I'm still just using 3DP, especially the 3DP net. I'll just install that. That usually just will install the NIC controller or the wireless driver. And then if it's Windows 10, I kind of just let it, that Windows updates install its thing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Paco. I've been using 3DP for years now. The thing I notice is that, like you said, when you're installing the Ethernet and the wireless, that one, I don't see any kind of packaged in software. Right. It's the 3D chip that does it all the time. Yep. So, but otherwise, yeah, both those work really great. I've been using them for years. I haven't used anything else. So.
I just want to bring something up because this is something we talk about quite often. And so, Paco, what I was hearing from you is that us as business owners are so cheap that we don't feel like paying for software. So and we kind of complain when these other free tools start bundling adware in there. And the hardest thing we have to do is actually uncheck the box. And I'm being facetious, but you know where I'm going with this.
No, I know where you're going with it. Now, if 3DP had a yes, they have a donation button, I believe, if I'm not correct. if they would offer a paid version of their software to avoid that, absolutely, because it's helped me multiple times over and over again. But see, and I will play devil's advocate and switch it, is if these free tools don't offer a paid version, then how can we want to pay for it outside of just donating? And if the donations are not enough for them.
I agree with you. So, and it was a double-edged sword. So
I know. I want
everybody out there that makes these products, I want you to find a way, and there's many different ways that you can do this, that you can make this a paid for product. Now, to be honest with you, part of the problem, and I can tell you this right off the bat, is that there's not going to be enough people that will pay for it normally because it's not what we do. And so they will actually make more money from advertising or bundling in adware than they will from cheap business owners like us to actually pay for their product. So it's like chicken or egg, which comes first.
But I would suggest they offer both. Let them have a donation version that we can get for whatever. And then have an ad version if you don't want to pay for it.
Absolutely.
Because then they can make guys like us happy and we'll tout their product. Maybe more people will buy it. I mean, it sounds easy. Obviously, I don't sell a software product, so but
it sounds easy.
But since I do much of the corporate environment, just about every PC I touch is some sort of Dell commercial branded or corporate branded product. I use a Dell product called Dell Command Update, which does all my patching for me.
Hmm, that's good.
It'll be all this stuff we're talking about. I'm trying to keep up in the show notes, so it'll all be in there.
Awesome. And I'll tell you that
now, Snappy Driver Updater, just to sort of go back to Snappy Driver, it uses driver packs on the back end.
Does it? Okay. Interesting.
Yes. So it's just a nice front end interface to driver packs.
Okay. Now I've never had
it is pretty cool.
I've never had a problem with driver packs or Snappy Driver installer, but I will say this, I mostly use it to get the NIC card installed or the NIC driver installed. Once that was installed, I would either pick up through Windows updates most of the drivers, or like Nick was saying, go to whatever site, Dell, HP, so on and so forth, NVIDIA, AMD, and getting the actual driver from there and downloading it. It would be nice because part of the reason I don't do everything all the time is because I've seen it where it will break like motherboard drivers and things like that.
I solved that problem by buying a USB wireless stick off of Amazon that would automatically, the drivers would automatically load an XP Vista 7, 8, and 10. So I plug it in, it would automatically load no matter the OS. So I would automatically have my NIC no matter what.
Is that the J5?
I'll look it up while we're talking.
Okay.
In the chat.
Because I use the same thing when I can't get a NIC driver. Yeah, I'll do the same thing. I can plug that in, plug it
Ethernet cable. I just throw that in there, the drivers. Do what you do. Yep.
It runs every time, no matter what you plug it into. You don't have to download any drivers or anything. It just runs. All right. Let's go on with the email here. Number two, Fabs Auto Backup Pro For a long time at my work, me and my coworkers would take the user's folder on a Windows PC and transfer it to the backup drive. And to me, it is a good solution. True, used to do the same thing for transferring data, but it is an inefficient way of transferring data. After I paid the 45 euros, about 48 bucks in some change in US currency, to get the pro version of FABS Auto Backup, I was completely stunned by how the program worked in backing up customers' data. It gives you several options to pick from what folders you want backed up, transferred to the settings on the unit, wallpaper, screensaver settings, Internet Explorer favorites, Google Chrome favorites, etc. And from now on, for any data backup I do, I will always rely on FABS Auto Backup to back up the customer's data or transfer data from one computer to another. Well, anyways, those are two of my best tools I like to use at work. I would like to add more into the email, but I know there will probably be more to come along in the show. Thank you for reading this email and spreading the word. Thanks, Nick McCormick. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate that. So for everybody, does everybody here use FABS Auto Backup?
I do. I started using it after you were talking about it one time, Jeff, a while back.
Okay.
And then I bought it quite a few weeks ago, and yeah, I love it. It works great. I haven't seen it mess up yet. And like you, I went back, double-checked, made sure it grabbed everything, and it didn't miss nothing. But it works great. Awesome program.
You know, and a lot of times, this is not going to be 100%, but when you're using FABS, what I will do sometimes is I actually will take a few extra minutes, and I will go down and dig down into the FABS backup, and I'll look at things like the documents folder. And then I'll look at the documents folder on the original drive. Hey, do they match up in size? Pictures, so on and so forth. All your big main things where a lot of your data is kept, just do a quick double check. Okay, yep, all that stuff's there. You might even open it up just to see, hey, is there pictures in there? Yep, there's JPEGs. Great. Move on. Okay, there's Word documents, so on and so forth. But it backs stuff up. I have had no complaints whatsoever. And what's really nice about it is you can take that information. I've taken it from a XP Vista machine and moved it over to Windows 7, Windows 8. It moves over flawlessly and puts all the files where they need to go, even on a upgraded operating system. So I love it.
Right. Yeah, and the Pro Plus that I like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, man. The Pro version's awesome. The reason why I spent that 50 bucks with the Pro is because with the other version, you couldn't pull it off if you had a drive pulled out and slate. Right. And tried to back up data that way. With the Pro, it's just awesome. It pulls out everything, grabs all the keys for, like, you know, Office and everything, which is just sweet without trying to figure out what it was at one point in time. But yeah, I mean, it was a great program. I love it. So go ahead, Paco.
That was actually one of the first softwares I actually purchased, being the cheap tech that I was back in the day.
What do you mean being?
You know what? It's your show. I'm going to respect, why I like Pro 2 is because of the two new features. And I don't know how long it's been, but I started noticing it. And I think Jeff, you were the one that brought it up to me is one, it has the regular log, but it also gives you a log of all the applications and software that was installed on the machine. So I found that really cool because like I'll use Nynite and I'll install as many of the applications that I can for free. If they haven't specifically gave me something like, for example, Microsoft Office or something of that nature, and I can't pull the key. And then the other thing is printers that were installed on that machine as well. So I can just go ahead, download the drivers of whatever that brand printer, they hook it up. And that's one of the number one things I always get a call back on is my printer doesn't work.
Right.
Now having that, and it's always one of those things you least think about because you're worrying about all the data, all the software, making sure it's up and running, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But these little things are what really help move forward with your installation / you know, customer service.
Right. That's good. Very good. All right. Let's go ahead and I think we're done with FABS. I'll say this, and probably a lot of businesses will be mad at me. But Fabrice, I know if you're listening, and you're probably not, but you're charging too little for that program, just to let you know.
I hear pitchforks and torches right
exactly now. Burning down a house, baby. All right, so let's go. This is from, let's see, that was email number 2, Cormac O'Donohue. Jeff, you asked what is the main tool we use. My go-to tool is Linux Mint. Yes, Jeff, your favorite Linux. Jeff, it's time for you to get with us cool kids. I'm 42. It's all about Linux. If I come across a Windows laptop with a Wi-Fi problem, the first thing I do is load Mint on it. Not install, to test if it's hardware or software. A drive won't read in Windows. Try it in Linux. CD player not working in Windows? You guessed it. Try Linux Mint. And a great thing about this all-in-one tool, it's free. Happy Christmas to you, Jeff, and the crew from me in little old Ireland. And maybe, Jeff, Santa might leave you a Linux Mint USB in your stocking. Thanks for everything this year.
That's hilarious.
I appreciate it. Cormac, that was awesome. I really appreciate that. Yes, I actually do use Linux if I have to, but here's the thing. There's some great Windows tools out there that actually do work like 99.9% of the time. So me having to pull out my Linux box, which is sitting right behind me, I mean, it has Windows 10 on it too, but it on a secondary little tiny hard drive, I've got Linux on there. So I can boot it up either way. I do have to use it for hard drive recovery every once in a while, or I might have to look at something. Or sometimes I just play around with it. Not too much, though, because I don't want to go blind. But so I do use it. It's just not as much. And now there's a lot of people that run their businesses on Linux, and they use Linux for a lot of the go-to tools for how they run their business. And that's awesome. And I will say this. If you are used to, or if you are wanting to learn on something, use Linux. For me, I'm either stupid or I just need a little more guidance with a beautiful GUI or something where I just throw a program in that I know works. It does what I need to do and I move along. I don't want to take all the time to.
And we have a show called Linux for the rest of us.
That's true.
People can tune into.
That's true. So anyways, does anybody else here use Linux?
Of only any one forced sort? It. Yeah, I use it all the time when I image drives. Image for Linux.
Paco?
Kind of like what John said, when you have to. Like I had, it's not often, but I'll have clients that will drop off laptops without their hard drive. And they're like, hey, the Wi-Fi is not working. I kind of need the hard drive to kind of see what's going on. But I, for whatever reason, so I'll just stick a Ubuntu key and just see if the hardware is working. Like, yep, looks like everything's good. If you want to drop off that hard drive, I'm pretty sure there's probably something going on with your drive.
Gotcha.
So.
That's kind of different.
Well, it's like anything else. I mean, some guys use Craftsman, some guys use Snap-on, some guys use the tool that works best for you.
Right. Right.
We can all get together. It's Christmas time. We can all.
We are the world. Oh.
Yeah, Jeff was in the Army, and I still like him. So
that's right.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, Marines. Squirrel, what? Oh, I'm sorry. Anyways, Kurt, how about you?
Rarely do I ever use it. I mean, I've installed Linux for folks that absolutely wanted that because they were sick of Windows. There's another tech in town here that'll just do it, and people bring their computers home, and they'll go, what's this? And then they'll bring it back to me and go, I used to have Vista on here, and I don't know what this is. Yeah, let me put the Vista back on for you. So it's happened quite a bit. But yeah, I use Ubuntu every so often.
Okay.
So not very much, but just once in a while.
And I think when people get used to using Windows, they're just used to it. Now, I don't get me wrong. I believe they can be trained on using something like Ubuntu or Linux Mint, I'm understanding, is as close to XP Windows 7 that you can get. Now, I haven't personally used it, but that was my understanding. So. All right. Let's see. Oh, now we're going to get down to some nitty gritty here. All right, this is from Lance Howell. All right, the tools I use in my business include PowerShell. I use PowerShell scripts to do simple network scanning and troubleshooting. Anyone else?
Oh, yeah, PowerShell.
You like PowerShell?
Yum.
PowerShell. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. PowerShell is nice to use when you want to have that problem with Windows 7 that takes forever to download updates, and then I have a little package I keep on a flash drive to install the updates so it gets past that point. And you run PowerShell in order to shut down the Windows Update service. And you can actually install the updates a lot quicker. It doesn't take as long for it to do it. So you just type in the command through PowerShell, it goes so much faster.
Okay. So instead of manually going in and shutting down the update service, you basically have a script built into PowerShell that you're running through there.
Yeah, I just have one. Yep. I just go into like PowerShell and boom, run it, and it just automatically. So
that's a great tip right there.
PowerShell is kind of like scripting on steroids. I mean, it just gives you a lot more deeper access to commands. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Paco, PowerShell?
I haven't used it.
Okay.
More command prompt, but it's something that's on my to-do list.
Yeah, mine too. my list is only like
how's that
this long. Oh, yes. If only there were so many. If only I had 48 hours in a day, I still wouldn't have enough time. All right. Number two, WordPress or Drupal? WordPress and Drupal website development. I haven't seen that word Drupal in a long, long time. I'm surprised that people are still using Drupal for website development. I'm sure there's a use case scenario I am just not aware of. You guys? WordPress, Drupal?
I don't do website design. So
what do you use right now?
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
I use TechSite Builder for my good friend Matthew Rodella. He takes care of all my
I use Halidor.com.
There you go. All right. Yep, and that is built on a WordPress website that you don't have to mess with or maintain or do anything because he does it all for you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. Kurt?
No, I haven't used it, but I know when I take over the website after I buy a PC Doctor like I talked to you about.
Yep.
Then I'll probably go with somebody to take care of it because, I won't do it. So
gotcha.
I'll have someone take care of it.
And I know there's a lot of businesses out there that do both the technical side as far as fixing computers, supporting businesses, and also website development. Yeah. I'm just not one of them. And it doesn't sound like anybody else here is. All right, number three, system information for Windows, SIW. I have this program so I can get a clear picture of what the customer has on his computer and get a report of things that could be upgraded if needed, and get an inventory of the system for possible later use in case I have to replace any software or hardware. SIW. I know Mike Smith from the Mike Tech Show talks about SIW all the time in his business. Does anybody here use SIW?
I do not.
My RMM takes care of all that.
Your RMM takes? Okay. SIW. Nope, I haven't used that. I probably need to play around with it because it sounds like it takes a good picture and you can basically throw it on a computer, get everything you need and pull it all into one, basically one template and understand what's on that network.
It is. It is everything.
Okay.
I do have a tech license for it. And if you run it, it does give you, if you print the report, you can kill some trees, baby.
Yeah, okay.
It's a lot.
And you don't have to, I mean, obviously a lot of your businesses are maintained, but as far as if you were going in first time to see what was on a network, see what was on each individual workstation, is that a tool that you would probably use back in the day, John?
That would definitely be one way to do it. You bet.
Okay. Great. All right. And number four, various portable apps, GE Geeks Toolkit, Tech Suite, portableapps.com, and multi-boot Linux USB drive. I have three or four USB drives with several tools on it in different places around the business and in different bags, so I will always be prepared to provide some type of service. I have a USB drive with specialized Linux distros, Kali Linux, Kane Linux for forensics, and Ubuntu. Very cool. I don't know why I do this, but I actually, a long time ago, bought the GE Geeks Toolkit, and I think it was a donation, but he gives you constant updates, and it will download every possible tool you could think of. And I keep it on one drive just in case I run into a weird situation where I need to get a tool, and I can go in there and look under whether it's Windows updates, forensics, whatever. Drivers, so on and so forth. There's all malware removal. I think it's up to like 700 and some odd tools. And basically, he's built a tool that you can go in, and it probably takes 45 minutes to do the initial download. But I'll go in, and you can update those things on the fly, and it will update everything. And you could drag it over to your USB stick, or You can even update it on a USB stick. I don't, just because it's kind of a pain. So, but yeah, I like it just for having, I like to have the tools, even though I don't have to use most of them, except on rare occasions. And then obviously Tech Suite. Yeah. Great tool there. We were talking about it for doing diagnostics on computers. Great tool for that if you don't have the OEM software, whatever their tool is for checking the hardware, hard drive, RAM, so on and so forth. And portable apps, I used to use that years ago. It had a lot of cool tools on there, not so much. It's really hard to maintain a lot of these tools, to be honest with you. It's almost like a full-time job. And then multi-boot Linux USB drive. And there's many different ones out there. I've never been able to get them to work with any type of consistency. So what I do is I just buy a bag full of USB 3 drives and basically put each operating system, whatever I need on there, whether it's Ubuntu, Windows 10, 64-bit, 32-bit, so on and so forth. What about you guys with your various portable apps? What do you guys carry around with you?
I basically use like... I'll use D7, the original. I'll use D7 too. I've been using another one too, which is a Windows Repair Tool. That it's got a really kind of a generic interface, but it works really well.
Okay.
I think it's by Bryce Whitney over on TechNibble. So, you know, that one works pretty good. It downloads everything on the fly, so you have the newest version. Whereas D7, you got to make sure you always update the tools because everything is saved right on the drive.
Right.
Whereas it doesn't. It just downloads it to a temp folder, runs the program, does what it needs to do. As soon as you install the program, it deletes the folder and all the programs it delete, you know, brought on. And it's gone. And it's nice because you don't leave anything behind for people to snoop through. So that one works really good. And yes, once in a blue moon, I do use Ultra Virus Killer.
Okay.
I use that one.
UVK, baby, UVK.
They got some good tools and they really improved their user interface. From like 5-6 years ago, so it's actually really nice now.
Okay.
So I like it. I do.
That's one of John's favorite tools, actually, right, John?
I do like that one. I also like his tech toolbox, which is a lot like GE, but with only 1,000 items, not 100,000. So
right. Now who does tech toolbox?
Same guy does UVK.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Very cool. So you can download the all that stuff there. Now, what do you guys keep on your Paco? What do you use as far as your portable apps?
I more Tech Suite than anything. So Tech Suite app, Windows app, bootable app, the reporting system from there. Portable apps, I will use Revo on Installer Portable Pro, and I bought that a little bit ago. I was using D7 on installer for a while, but I noticed that sometimes, even though I would update it, it would take the amount of time to uninstall it, but the apps would not be uninstalled. And normally when you would go to the control panel and you would, you know, uninstall, it would just say, you know, there's a remnants. This app is not installed anymore. You know, just remove. No, it would actually kick off the installer and actually go back and uninstalling. So I noticed that happen a couple of times. So okay. I just went to Revo Pro, Revo on installer Pro. That's worked. Great for me. Bleachbit portable. I've been using that in place of CCleaner portable that I had before. And those are probably the main portable apps. I have been going back and forth with Tech Suite apps because that's what I've used all the time. And lately I've been trying out Malwarebytes TechBench. They had talked about that in our last episode of the Computer Business Podcast, or two episodes ago, I should say. So if anybody doesn't know what that is about, you can email, the tech support manager over there about it. But I've been using that a lot lately, cause it's been more of a go-to for me. I just pop it open, run I got all my Malwarebytes tools there, JRT, ADW Cleaner will come in shortly thereafter, but their own remediation tool has picked up a lot of stuff for me. And especially with some bad Windows, updates like that, DHCP issue. I just run the NetSoc reset tool, which either Tech Suite or Malwarebytes TechBench tool will have, and fixes it no problem.
Right, right.
Rather than manually having to put in the commands in Command Prompt. So,
right. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Anything you can do to expedite your time definitely makes it worth it. Yeah, the problem and the nice thing is there is a ton of different tools out there, and I'm guilty for not just using one. I tend to jump from one to another just to try them out, see how they work, see what they do, see what gets left behind sometimes. Back it up with a manual going in and actually looking at the stuff. Oh, hey, how did this forget this or whatever, and just kind of looking at what each of these tools does. But it's as far as a process and going through something and making it work, any of these tools will do a job that will save you a ton of time and save you a ton of effort and a ton of keyboard time of actually being on there. Now you run it, walk away, come back, and you might have to finish up a couple things here or there, but yeah, that's to be expected. We're trying to fix broken computers, whether it has malware on it, hardware issues, software issues, whatever it is. And so these tools are not going to be 100%, but they're pretty darn close. So,
right. And I mean, like exactly like you said too, I mean, you should not be afraid to test out other tools, even though your process is kind of set down. I mean, you always want to look at the most up-to-date things, the things that are, you know, in the industry that are, hey, this is really working out pretty well, et cetera. I mean, perfect example. Everyone was using, what was it, SpyBot back in the day?
Oh, search and destroy, and, baby. Yeah.
I mean, that was the go-to spyware.
Adware.
Those programs were the go-to. And then a little company called Malwarebytes started coming out of nowhere and started grabbing more and more of the market share, Where now those techs, if they did not venture off to test other tools who are still running SpyBot, if it's still available, are probably doing a very injustice to themselves because there's so much more protection and things they can find on a more automated basis versus manual.
It's funny because SpyBot actually, it was no more than a year ago that there was people, and they were coming down the show and they were talking about, there was a great big update in SpyBot Search and Destroy. And I'll tell you what, I'm telling you, people were actually using it as their go-to tool again. And they were saying, oh yeah, it's catching all kinds of stuff. It's taking care of all this and that and the other. And so
one of my fellow friend techs is also using it still the same as well. I mean, I haven't used it in years, so maybe. It's not here to say that they haven't done an uptick, but I think the biggest thing is that when you have market share and you have the funds to support it, I mean, it's really just up to you on which tool, like you just mentioned before, is really up to you. Whatever is your flavor, that's kind of what you want to do.
Right. Exactly. Yep. And yeah, you get kind of an idea of what these tools can do and you kind of understand them a little bit better. So I know a lot of people say they love to run a manual process, which they're not really running a manual process. They have a folder full of tools that they click on and they go, yeah, here's my manual process. That's not manual. Manual is when you're going in the registry and you're looking at each and every key that could be infected. And there's over 200 of them. And then you can figure out whether or not you want to go through that process. That's manual. And I don't really know anybody that does that anymore. And even though I can, I don't.
Right.
Let's take a fork. I got a couple of tools I'll throw into the hopper.
Yeah, go ahead.
I went through my little tool list and I grabbed out the ones that I thought I haven't heard of before, or I haven't really, people haven't talked about in a lot. Some of these I've used on a Hail Mary and I think they're pretty great.
I love Hail Mary.
So my first one is, you know, everybody's used ScanNow SFC System File Checker.
Yep.
So there's a program called SFC Fix. So when you run SFC ScanNow and then it comes back and says, oh, there's a lot of problems, but sorry, I'm not going to be able to help you out. Check the log. You take care of it. I'm taking the day off. This will actually go in and try to fix some of that SFC corruption and fix some of those problems automatically. So it's pretty cool.
Nice.
I don't know. I'm not going to throw 100% recommendation behind it, but if you got a last-ditch effort to fix a problem, I definitely would put it in your toolbox to give it a shot. The next one would be Shadow Explorer, the software application to go in and look at. I think everybody knows about that, but maybe forgets about it. I use an IP scanner called Angry IP Scanner. So when I hit a network for the first time, or even quarterly when I do my network scanners, I usually start with this. So boom, I run Angry IP Scanner and it shows me everything on the network. Services, IPs, so like FFT, SSH, IPs, you know, anything like that. So I can see if there's anything new that's hopped on my network, or I can log in from there, or I can just see what's going on the network.
Now, are you scanning this on a machine that has admin rights or a server?
It does not matter. If it touches the network, you can go and, you know, if, ports are open or services are rendered, or if just the IP is there, you can see that.
Mm. Okay, cool.
Nice.
A newer application is 10 Apps Manager from the Windows Club. You can uninstall all those really handy Windows 10 default apps that nobody ever uses. I like a little program called Battery Info. The only reason I like that is it's a little app you can run, and I use it a lot remotely. So if somebody has a laptop where their battery has gone bad, I can hit it remotely, and it'll actually come back and sometimes give me the make and the model number of the battery.
Ooh,
you know,
nice.
A lot of the times I know what battery it is that's going to Dell, but if I try to have them explain to me, well, what voltage is it? Is it the extended battery, the small battery? Do you want the big battery? And then all I get back is silence, and I'm just like, wow, just let me log in. Okay.
Nice.
A little program called HDD Guardian. It's kind of a lot like, help me out here. I'll come on blanking. What's our hard disk test program?
Crystal Disk.
Come on. Crystal. It's a lot like Crystal, but with probably on steroids.
Okay.
Another little one I use is called Mem Test with a capital T. And this is kind of a weird one that I use, again, remotely, but it's a Windows memory tester.
Yeah.
And I know the first thing you're going to say to me is, John, why would you ever use a Windows memory tester? Just a really easy way to find out remotely if it's just the memory. So you pop this thing in. If it fails right away, you know you got bad RAM. Mm-hmm. And then what else I got on my list? AV Uninstall Tool Pack. Have you guys used that? It's just got the uninstallers for every AV program ever created by man.
Interesting.
That you just click on. So Kaspersky, I mean, all of them. There's probably a list of 50 of them.
Okay, cool.
I like Shut Up 10 by ONO Software. You know, if you're the paranoid type, you can go through that and turn off all the stuff that pops up beyond Windows 10.
Tim Hang Foyle.
In there, two more.
Oh.
my data recovery software that I run under Windows is called Get Data Back by Runtime Software.
I've heard good things about
and
that.
And then I've already talked about Terabyte Software's image for Windows and stuff. So that's my little toolbox of unknown items that I use, plus that, everything guys talked about.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's a lot of stuff. Yeah, you're right. Sometimes we do forget about certain tools out there because there are so many. So that's cool. Kurt, how about you?
There's a few that I recognize that John was talking about that I've tried out. Excuse me. But there's other ones like the IP scanner and stuff that I use now for reading IP addresses for people's homes, especially if I'm doing remote work and I'm trying to get the printer set up. And the one thing that I've learned from quite a few years ago is instead of just using the IP that the modem gives, I turn around and make a static IP. That way they don't drop and lose that connection all the time. It's more solid. So I've had a lot better luck with that, and I don't hear anything anymore until they have some other problem.
Smart. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And then like one of the things Apaco was talking about was that he was using the D7 uninstaller, and I ran the same issues you did, Paco, where a lot of times I wasn't uninstalling it. And that's where I fell on UVK, because UVK has one built in that uninstalls, plus it has an option to force uninstall. You just choose it right down the list, let it run, and it's all self-automated. Most times you don't even have to go back and click a button or nothing. It works really good. So that's one of the reasons why I use UVK for that specific purpose. So,
ditto.
Okay. Yeah. That's good to know. Yeah. Because I'm still a little old school, and I actually uninstall them one by one.
The other one I kind of like, if you want to use UVK, is it's a little free portable app. It's called the Geek Uninstaller. It's just simple and quick, and it does a good job. It's a lot like Revo, but a lot easier.
Okay.
Now, Paco, going back to that Revo uninstaller, does that actually, can you like line up what you want to uninstall and let it run? Or is that, you got to sit
there? No, with Pro, you can. Yeah. It's control and you select whatever, and then you hit quick and uninstall. And yes, it'll grab all of it.
Now, what about the registry entries and all that? Mm-hmm. Takes it all out. Oh, very good. All right. Cool. I learned something new today. And actually, I've learned a lot of things new because I didn't realize UVK had that, because I actually have the pro version.
I actually do too. So I just haven't had a chance to.
I'm like, oh, that does that? Oh, I might have to pull that. Actually, it's on all my USB sticks. All right. Question.
I've been telling you, Jeff.
I know. We're supposed to do a training. How many USB sticks? No. Just me being your friend is payment enough.
Tell me about it. It's a pain.
Give me the discount rate.
So how many USB sticks do you have with your tools on it?
God. not including
with
OSs,
different tools or duplicates of the same stick.
Go through whatever USB sticks you have, whether it's in your vehicle, in your office, in a bag. What types of USB sticks do you have, and how many?
Including OSs or just tools?
Including whatever.
Oh. Yeah, whatever you got.
Jesus.
One.
Really?
One.
Besides
one.
Windows 10, one.
Yeah, yeah, I got it. Yeah. I mean,
I've all. Got
one. I was going to say, like, I got I have a 1 terabyte hard drive that has all my tools.
Okay.
As far as OSs, because I haven't got any of the multi-boot Linux thing to work, I got it maybe working once. And then a lot of the UEFI OSs weren't booting. So I went back to try and fix it, and I just destroyed the entire drive. So I have to redo it again. But I'll keep, man, I got an all-in-one. So probably 5 USB drives, and those USB sticks are OSs.
Okay.
So 7, 8, 10.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, I got
some sticks on my bench that I boot from. You know, like the Windows 10 installers and some other OSs. Yeah. So I probably have 5 or 6 if you include those.
Yeah. Because I've got like a total of 8 USBs that I have all my software on. Of course, I'm still old school. I don't have a lot of ISOs that are on the USB stick. I still got them on the DVD. And then I just got like a portable DVD, you know, USB DVD burner and stuff that I use to plug into computers. I don't have one. But I still
carry all that too, just in case.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, that's what I still do. I'm still old school in that part. But otherwise, yeah, I've got like all of the Microsoft Offices all on one USB stick. And then if I need to reinstall it for someone and I got their product key, I just turn around, pop it right back on and get it installed and activated again. So.
It's good. Yeah, and I've got, same thing, Paco. I've got a 1 terabyte external hard drive, little Western Digital Passport that has all my tools on it. And I also drivers and all that kind of stuff. Cause like drivers are 18, 20 gigs WSUS. That's like 28 gigs total, blah, 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 so on and so forth. But USB sticks, I probably have at minimum, I'm looking over here now, probably about 15.
I was gonna say, don't you have like a keychain of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hanging right in my closet. Now, most of those are ISOs. Like I said, Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 10. And some of them, you can do the multi-versions where you can do 64-bit, 32-bit, I think on Windows 10, but on the other ones, you can't. So I don't even bother with the 32-bit. I have all that stuff on the DVDs in a binder that I still keep just in case I ever need to whip it out. But again, it's one of those things where a lot of this stuff is hard to maintain. So unless you have an employee.
That's what you poor retail guys have to put up with.
Oh, yeah.
It's why our business guys have it a lot better. Because you never know what's coming in the darn door.
Exactly. Exactly. And I wish I had an employee that could just back up all these ISOs and slipstream them and do all that kind of stuff. So that, and I'll be honest with you, Windows 10 anymore, it seems like when I install it, I pretty much don't have to do anything to it. It just runs. It installs the NIC driver and it updates. It updates on the fly. It just runs. So all those naysayers about Windows 10, that's all I got to say to you.
That's a different show. I like it, but we can get in a fight about it if you want.
Oh, all right. So a lot of tools out there. Wow. And John, for those that aren't watching the video, I've been watching John, and John is just back and forth scurrying. I know he's putting a ton of stuff to get all these links and notes and stuff together for you guys. So I know we're going to have a comprehensive list of links that you can go to and pick up any of these tools that you want. So
how do you spell Linux?
Linux? What's that?
S-U-X.
That's my abbreviation.
Easy. Easy. Oh, that
was good. That was quick. Wow. Send those to Jeff at podnuts.com.
Oh, anyways. All right. Let's take a quick break here. And then we'll get back into more emails. I want to take this time to thank Paco LeBron for all his hard work in setting up the guests for Podnuts Daily. For those of you that don't know, Paco has been basically coordinating with guests and getting them on Podnuts Daily, which is awesome. Because to be honest with you, I just I ran out of a bunch of time to be able to coordinate back and forth. So if people wanted to come on the show, it was always available. But Paco's actually gone above and beyond the Call of Duty and gone out there and actually sought these people out and said, hey, come on the show. And he's actually making it happen. So thank you, Paco, for keeping Podnets Daily going, because without you, who knows if there would have been, you know, shows here and there, but he's been keeping it consistent and the guests are excellent and they've been a fun to actually talk with and learn from. So thank you, Paco. Appreciate that.
No problem. I mean, I haven't said this in a while, but you know, when I first ran into Podnuts, I threw my series of trails that I went through, from one company to another to finally finding the network. You know, I had been doing it at the time, probably 13, 14 years I've been doing this. And, you know, and I'll still say the same thing that I say then that I say now. You know, it wasn't until the last 2 years, the last 2 years have made me a much better tech than I had been the 14 years doing it on my own. And I owe that to not only just the Podnuts live show, but specifically to the Podnuts Daily show, because a lot of people tend to think that, oh, I don't have a lot to volunteer. You know, I just started out. You know, I'm a part-time tech. You know, it's one of those where you don't know what you can offer. And there's always those little nuggets. There's always something that will resonate with a listener or listeners. And my time through the last couple of years have proven that no matter how much little you believe you'll share, you will find a lot to, you can resonate with a lot of listeners. That's why, you know, I had Matthew Rodella approach me to be on the show. That's why I still come on here to try and help out as much as I can. And that's why I'm so passionate on being able to make sure that Podnuts Daily keeps going, because I still want a lot of new, vibrant, and even those that have been around in the business for a long time to share your knowledge, because there are other techs out there that would extremely benefit from it, because I was one of those techs that did.
Awesome. Well, appreciate
it. Well said.
I also want to thank John Dubinsky for the fabulous show notes that he's provided for the show. Because, again, if it wasn't for people like John, there would be no show notes. Because guess what? I ain't doing them.
So, they are fabulous.
They are fabulous. Fabulous. So I appreciate that, John. Again, thank John, because he has taken his own time and effort doing the show and putting show notes together and bringing you guys the information, the links that you love to go to and click on to find the things that we talk about. So I really appreciate that. And he always adds more in than I would have even thought of. So good job, John.
Let's just be honest. You told me as long as I do show notes, I can be on the show. So
okay. Okay. All right. So I appreciate that. And I also want to thank you, the audience, for listening to us and for all the guests that were on Podnuts Daily and or the Computer Repair Podcast. Without you guys either listening or being a part of the show, there would be no show. And I know a lot of people look to me and they thank me and say, Jeff, thank you for the job that you do and appreciate you putting this stuff together. To be honest with you, I am just the button pusher, bring stuff together. But without the guests, there's no way we could do what we do, because I am not going to carry a show by myself. It's just not how I'm wired. I love talking with other people. So I appreciate each and every one of you that's come on the show and each and every one of you that listens to the show on a regular basis. And keep that up and we'll keep the show alive.
And I'm going to interject, because I think Jeff is being a little too modest, and I agree with him 100% without our audience and listeners that we just won't have a show. But Jeff does a lot for not only this show and the shows that he hosts for, but just the network in general. And, you know, I want to say that, you know, we want to thank him as well, because although he's modest, without him, I truly believe there's a lot of things in the background that you guys don't see won't get done. And I think that the amount of dedication that he has, the amount of times that he continues to be consistent with all of his shows that he hosts, we're pretty much very grateful to have him as a host here and look forward to many other new shows as we come in the new year, just because of what he does is just that fantastic.
I appreciate that, Paco. Thank you very much.
Thank you, brother.
I'm hugging you, man. I'm hugging you.
I got a little tear in my eye. No, I do appreciate it. I really do. All right. I also want to thank everyone that has sent in an email this year. Again, without everyone involved, there wouldn't be a show. We live off your emails. Now, going forward, let me say this, for 2017, I would like to get more calls coming into the show. And that means we're going to need more live listeners. So what I need the audience to do is basically go out there and just tell your friends in the forums, in the Facebook groups, and wherever on the internets. Well, okay, acquaintances. Even if you don't like them, just tell them to come out, check out the show. It's on Sunday afternoons at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're here every week, except if it's like a holiday, like Mother's Day or something like that. But pretty much I try to every Sunday be here. This works around my schedule, my regular work schedule. And so I just want to be consistent with it. That's why it's at this time. So for those that, hey, just spread the word. And let's get more people coming on the show. Let's get more people emailing. And let's get more people calling into the show. So that would be great. Yeah, let's keep it rocking for 2017. This will be the last show of the year. We'll be back January 8th, 2017. We're going to enjoy two holidays, Christmas and New Year's. So enjoy those couple weeks of not having to listen to me. And now, quite honestly, I'm already thinking in the background the actual things that I can get done in the 2 weeks in between time to make processes and things work out a little bit better as we move forward. So I'll be working on some of that stuff. But anyways, yep, just keep it coming, guys. So appreciate it. And I just want to thank each and everyone that's here, has been on the show, and is listening to this show. All right, so let's go ahead and continue on. Let's see. We are on.
I was going to say, I got a lot more on my list.
Oh, we're not done yet. We're not even close to done. Man, we're going to go all night long. Oh, if you got to go to the bathroom, go ahead and get up and go. But no. All right. So this is from Michael Woodward. Said, wanted to let you know something on episode 212 about Malwarebytes and a central dashboard. Continuum bundles Malwarebytes in with their endpoints, and it does have somewhat of a central dashboard to control Malwarebytes. I did not realize that. So that in itself is really cool. Yeah. You don't hear about that a whole lot. So that's cool. Now, I emailed Michael back and said, hey, what types of tools do you use? And so we're going to continue on here. All right. We use several different tools on the business end. We do use Screen Connect as our primary remote support tool and use it as a backup to Continuum for remote agents for our business clients. We also have our own in-house remote backup solution. We are an AVG cloud care provider, but for the clients that are doing RMM, we have been using Webroot because it's bundled in with Continuum. And as I mentioned, we use Continuum for our RMM solution. We use it both for our residential clients that want a virus protection plan and for our business clients that need more monitoring and maintenance. This is Michael Woodward, Excel Computer Services. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that. Screen Connect. I've heard a lot of good things about it. John, I know you have a license still. You're still using it. Anybody else?
I use it as a backup right now. I don't have it. I really like Screen Connect.
Okay.
I moved away from it because I didn't want to host my own. I used to host it on Amazon, and I wanted to get away from that.
Okay.
I wanted to put my compliance burdens on somebody else. Really, really. To be honest.
No, that's
true. But yeah, I have nothing negative to say about Screen Connect. It was very solid.
And they do both now, right? They do the self-hosted version and they do, you can still host your own as far as I know. So, nice backup solution. Anybody else use
Screen Connect? I think there's a couple RMMs. Continue. I know Panorama 9 uses Screen Connect. There's a couple RMM platforms that use Screen Connect as the remote support and access.
Okay. Anybody else use it before? I haven't, so I don't know anything about it.
I've used a self-hosted one, but I haven't used the cloud version that they have offered.
This one is from Robert Moore, and he sent in a few emails this year. It says, Jeff and Podnuts crew, things have gotten a lot better since my debacle with the Surface 4 Pro. We're continuing to work on getting the business up and running. I don't think I've ever mentioned this. However, you, Jeff, and I are close neighbors. We're located in Jackson, Michigan. We've got a new name, the tech department at thetechdepartment.net.com is currently parked and for sale for $2,180 maybe after a couple months, LOL. However, there's nothing there yet. I'm looking at using TechSite Builder. Yes, please do. WordPress or Joomla? No, just have somebody else do it. You will save yourself time, money, and headaches. All right. We plan on having a simple website up this weekend or early next week. We have our phone number and have a Google My Business profile. Yeah, TechSite Builder, you can have set up literally with the information that is needed for 99.9% of the people that are going to find you in less than an hour. And I hate doing websites. I'm not good at doing websites. And I had it set up in less than an hour, even asking a couple questions. He's got great videos over there that you can watch. It walks you through the process if you don't know what you're looking at, and you'll get set up right away. All right. The one spot I'm hoping you can help with is Google AdWords. Oh, yeah. I've been catching up on Podnuts Daily, the Computer Repair Show, and Podnuts Pro. I've heard many times that you're willing to give out your AdWords to help a person out. Would it be possible for you to send your copy of AdWords? We would really appreciate it, as it would give us a head start into using Google AdWords. And I did send that off. Backstory on Google AdWords. I did not come up with the original list. Now, I have sculpted and maneuvered that list for the last 5 years personally, but the original list that it started off with was from Steve Cherubino. And when he was doing these shows, he had sold the original TechSite Builder version 1, which was a static HTML webpage. But he also showed you in his videos on how to set up Google AdWords. So that's where I got all my information from. And he also put in there the AdWords that he was using in his area. And it was like over 300 keywords. And so I've taken that list and kind of, I've cut some things down, but I've made adjustments that made sense for my area and for what I was doing. So it is a good starting place. And if anybody wants that, send me an email and I will get that off to you. All right. I think that pretty much updates you guys on what we're doing right now. Hopefully in the near future, I'll be telling you how busy we are and wondering what I'm going to do with all the excess work. Always think good thoughts. Now, I'd be wondering what I'm going to do with all the excess money. That's why we do this, right? It's all about the money. Thanks for your help and everything you guys do for the community. Robert Moore, the tech department. That's a great name. That really is a great name.
Yeah, I like that too. It is catchy.
Good job on that. And Jackson, Michigan, we got another Michigander. Who knew? Oh my gosh, so much competition. I don't know what to do. Anyways, that's excellent. All right, so let's see. I think that was the last official email with different tools and things. Now, what types of things have we not brought up yet? And Kurt, you kind of been a slight bit quiet. Is a newcomer on the show, but what types of things do you use on a regular basis that we haven't talked about yet that you go, yeah, you know, I use this and I haven't heard this brought up, today.
Oh, let's see.
I know I put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
No, nope, that's all right. I used to use a program, excuse me. I used to use a program that was called, it's like Driver Backup, and that one used to work pretty well, but my problem is that after a while, the paranoia kicks in. I don't know if I'm going to have a corrupt driver and wind up reinstalling a corrupt driver on a fresh install. So I've gotten out of the habit of using that anymore, where I just basically, if, like, for instance, Lenovo, you can go in, you can download the bridge software, it'll run it, and boom, it'll have all the drivers for that particular model. You just hit download, and it goes. So I like that. Can't say that about all models, you know, because not all of them are set up that way. But Driver Backup was good when I was using it. There was another program I used before. I can't remember what it was right at the top of my head right at the moment. But I used to do Mail Backup, because when you're trying to transfer Outlook Express and you're trying to move it into, like, Outlook or Windows Live Mail or something like that, the compatibility wasn't there. And this program was supposed to be kind of like that middle road in order to make it compatible. It was supposed to download everything, all the information, and then you're able to upload it and it converts it automatically. I can't remember the name of the program. I'm drawing a blank right now. But it worked good at the time, but now I don't worry about it much anymore because I've gotten in the habit where I always just went in and pulled out the PSD folder, got the email information using web browser, PassView, or whatever it might have been, email PassView. You know, a lot of those are good. And now with, you know, Fabs auto backup, you know, it does most of it for you now. And
right.
it makes it so much quicker for me.
Right.
You know, and like this time of year, it's slow for me. So I do a lot of reading to find out what's new, what's going on out there, because no one comes in during the Christmas time. And as soon as January hits, everybody and their uncle's going to come in and slam me and go, hey, I need this transferred. I need this set up. So then it'll get busy for me again. So right now it's my whole learning and getting new information and trying to catch up on stuff. So if somebody has a question, I can actually answer, you know, so, but awesome. Otherwise for any other kind of software, not too much. A lot of that we discussed, I've used like you guys, and there's some I've never heard of that I just never had a reason to use it. So, but you know, there's some good ones out there, especially the ones that John's are going to be posting. I'll check some of those out. Those sound like they're pretty good too. So,
now let me ask you a question. Anybody can answer this, but when I'm setting up somebody with an email account, whether it be for a Microsoft account or a Gmail account for their Android phone or whatever it is, a lot of times when I'm setting them up, I'm just telling them to use the webmail. We're not even going to bother with setting up Outlook or Windows Live Mail. And what's it called nowadays? I don't even know what it is.
I think it's just mail.
Mail. Okay.
Just mail.
They simplified all the terms. But anyway, so a lot of times, because I don't want to deal with it when they come back to me and I've got to, you know, fix their system or reload it or do whatever I got to do, I just want them, hey, you've got access to your webmail. You've got it on your phone. You've got it on the internet. You're good. And I understand the business clients, that's a whole nother thing. But for residentials, how many people are actually pushing them to using just webmail?
That's a good question, because I try that with most folks. The problem is that with some of them, they have like programs that they use like Magic Mail and things like that. And some clients, they just hate the way it looks. It's not user-friendly. It's just ugly. And they want something, I don't know why, they need some kind of eye candy. It's got to be more pleasing to the eye. It's got to be more uniform for them to use. So, you know, back in the day, I used to use Windows Live Mail 2012. I used to use that all the time. It was simple. A lot of people loved it. They could save whatever information they want. But because it's no longer supported and Microsoft doesn't want much to do with it anymore, now I'm switching them over to like Mozilla. I'll have them use like Mozilla Thunderbird instead. So at least I can still back up information, get the information I need. To them, it's good enough because it has a calendar. It has these basic things that they want. A lot of people didn't like the basic mail program that came with Windows 8 and Windows 10. To them, it was just ugly. It was plain. There was nothing great about it. And they complained. And I wound up having to change it up for them to something else. I'm like, here, use Thunderbird. Then they're happy. You know, some folks like the web-based stuff. But yeah, most people, I always put them on Thunderbird after a while because they like it so much better. So,
all right. Paco?
The only programs I can think of is ProduKey. For any keys that you're trying to pull, especially those from Windows 8 and Windows 10 systems. Like after you use the generic key, you can find the key that's on the BIOS itself. Auto Runs and Process Explorer are two that I tend to look at. Like if something still is not acting right, I'll see what's open, see what's going on with that. So those are two programs I'll use quite often. And everything else, I think we've kind of talked about. As far as data recovery, there's a program I use called Disk Digger over at diskdigger.com. I think it's like $15 for the program or something like that. And I've found, like, I've ran a lot of, so my issue with data recovery is it'll be a drive that they don't want to pay, you know, the $450 to $1,500 for a data recovery company. So they'll ask me, you know, is there anything I could do in-house? If not, don't worry about it. I really don't care. I'm not going to pay that amount of money. So I've used a lot of the systems like Get Back Data, like John had mentioned. I've used, I know there's a couple other ones that I've used, and I've never really had great success because it's either been corrupted files or whatever the case. Disk Digger has actually been the only program that I've used, and I actually just found out about this in the last 6 months, that has had a much better success rate for me versus any other software that I've used. And this is more of a first line of defense because, again, I do have RStudio. Just our studio tends to take a lot more time. And the way that it transfers data, obviously, is pulling different things and different folders, where this, for anything that's been deleted, that's kind of what I'll go and use that for.
Okay. Gotcha.
So that's probably the tools I can think of other than the ones we've already talked about today.
Okay. John?
I got a couple more on my list. I mean, I already did my homework. So, all right. So the first thing that I've got is a couple pieces of hardware. Actually, this is a barcode scanner.
Ooh, nice.
And I put a show link in there. So if you guys are, you know, typing in your serial numbers by hand, I mean, I'm not the smartest hammer in the toolbox. This is what you need for $19 to save yourself.
There you go.
And there'll be an Amazon link in there. And make sure you use your PodNuts Amazon link when you buy this stuff, if you do.
Yes.
Yes. Jeff, I think you brought it up before, and I don't have mine to hold up. Maybe you do your DataVac.
My DataVac. The
alternative to canned air, if you would be yeah. so handy to hold that up. Everybody should have a DataVac. If you yes. don't have a DataVac. And actually, believe it or not, guy, there's a new, improved version, which looks a little bit more sexy than the 1960s version that Jeff is holding, which is the same one I have.
Really?
But that thing is solid. That thing is solid.
I love this.
If you're buying canned air or...
Yeah,
that is better than the leaf blower.
Little filter. Oh, it's a little dirty on the bottom. Little filter you can clean, though. Yeah, don't look at the bottom.
Best $60-$70 you'll ever spend.
Nice. Excellent.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Plus, it's
plug-in. I've got one in my. I carry one in my truck. I got one by the bench that I use. So nice job, Jeff. Nice, Vanna. Thank you very much. I would not suggest that, as it is fairly powerful. Not that Jeff has anything to blow out of there, but. The other thing I have is, you know, a lot of guys getting started, or even what I carry now, they're looking for a toolkit. And I'll put an Amazon link in there, but there's a tool brand called Tekton, T-E-K-T-O-N. You can get a tech rescue kit that they do. It's a nice small kit that should cover you about for 90% about every repair you do. Cool thing is it's like $22 on Amazon. So you can get started really cheap with that.
Nice.
And I could hold that up too. If everybody is interested, I have two versions of it. Here's one. Here's two. There's three.
So, it's funny. I actually have that small one that you just held up.
Yeah, I find it great.
Yeah, because I needed it for some Apple stuff, and that was the only one I could find that on Prime that would get here as soon as possible.
And the cool thing it is, you know, it's got a little suction cup thing. I mean, it covers you just about everything. There's very little in here that you leave you stranded. It's got a little mini spooger. Yeah, I mean, it's got a couple of things in there. So, yep. I brought some Android apps. I thought it would be cool to talk about a couple Android apps that I use on my phone for tech use.
Go ahead.
Everybody, if you know two-factor authentication, if you're not using it, I think you're crazy. Everybody, at least on any Android side of the house, usually runs to Google Authenticator, which I think is awesome. The problem with Google Authenticator is it does not have a way to back up your two factors. So if your device dies, you're going to have to go back and reset up. It's not a big deal if you've only got two, you know, four or five things you authenticate with. But if you've got a big list, I'd suggest looking at a program called Authenticator Plus. Does the exact same thing, but this one, you can back them up to your Google Drive or Dropbox or whatever. So that's handy. I use a product called Wi-Fi Analyzer, just a great way to jump in with someplace and get a good look of channels that are available, other access points in the area, that sort of thing. Love a product called Fing, F-I-N-G. Does the exact same thing as Angry IP Scanner, but it'll do it on your mobile device. And they have a really cool device coming out called the Fing Box, F-I-N-G-B-O-X. I'll put a link into that over on Indiegogo. And that is basically a little thing you plug into your network, which will do your entire inventory for you, as well as have help you troubleshoot your network. I use CloudTrack all the time. CloudTrack is the mobile software for OpenMesh. So that is very handy for me. And then maybe not on the tech side, I use an app called Park Mobile. If you live somewhere where Park Mobile services, you no longer need to carry change for meters. You just pay on your phone for parking meters.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
So check that out. See if that works for you. They have a service map on their website. And of course, all of these links will be in the show notes. That's all my software apps, but I do have some websites that I use that I thought I would pull out and add too. But I don't know if you want to go on to those now, Mr. Halish, or...
Go ahead, Mr. John.
Why, thank you, Mr. Halish. first one is, When I listen to the show, most guys are in the Office 365 bandwagon, it sounds like to me. I have a couple of customers that do use Office 365, but I am definitely a Google Apps / G Suite user. So I use something called the G Suite Toolbox all the time. Kind of obvious, it's just a lot of tools to help you manage your Google Apps, and I'll put a link in for that. Something I only use occasionally, but it's kind of handy. There's a lot of tools online to have you help you back up your Office 365 or G Suite applications to somewhere else, just in case you should have a problem. There's a software product called Cube Backup, which does the exact same thing, but it takes all your G Suite apps and backs them up locally. So you have a local backup of all your data. I use a website all the time called macvendors.com, not as an Apple Mac, but as in Mac address, M-A-C. So you type the Mac address of a product in, you know, if you get some product and you don't know what it is, or if you're remote, it'll tell you who makes it. If you do a lot with PDFs, I love PDF.com. I mean, you can find all the tools that are on that page in 100 other places. What I like about ilovepdf.com is it's not scattered with 1,000 ads. It's almost ad free. So that's a beautiful thing. With your email, you should be setting up SPF records and DKIM records and all that kind of stuff. And maybe that's a whole other show we can get into. But if you want to do that, you should be using a tool called the SPF query tool, which basically talks about sender policy framework and how to make sure that is working. If you're dealing with domains for your customers, you should be taking a look at domain tools. Basically, it has everything to do with domains, but registration. So you can monitor domains, find out the who is information, track the domain, blah, 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 blah. So it's everything about a domain, it's for registration. When you're setting up your routers or UTMs, you definitely want to use Open Port Checker. So basically, you set up some forwarding, poke a hole in your router device, you can go to the Open Port tool and make sure that you actually set it up right, that port is actually open. So it's a good way to test without having to go back to the app. There's a new website I started using a little bit called PrivNote. It's a great way to send a private note to somebody. So Jeff, if you wanted a password, everybody freaks out about sending passwords via email. You can go to PrivNote, put it there. I send it to you. You read it once and then the app, and then it discards. It explodes. It's kind of like Snapchat for notes. Nice. Obviously, yes, somebody could do a screenshot. Yes, they could do a bunch of other things, but at least you've done what you said you would do to try to keep things private. They do have a privacy policy you can read on their site. Obviously, we have no idea what they're doing on the back end for real, but somebody that's a lot more knowledgeable about privacy than I am said it looked like a good thing. So I'm on board with that. The final thing I'll plug on the web is the site called AskVG. Have you guys wandered over there or used any of their?
No.
Basically, it's like 1,000 other sites that are out there that is just full of Windows tips, troubleshooting guides, web browsers, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. What I like about AskVG, well, I'm going to give them a shout out, is, again, it's almost ad-free. If they give a tip, it's thoroughly laid out, well explained, not full of garbage links, not full of fake download links, blah, blah, blah. So, and it seems like when I do a Google search, I don't know why, but when I type it in, I seem to get a ton of results from them all the time. And maybe it's because I've clicked on them before or something like that, but they seem to hit my browser all the time. So I'm finding a lot now that I start there instead of Google even. So,
right. Okay, cool. Very good.
And of course, I will put all that good stuff or questionable stuff in the show notes.
The name of the show, Tool
Bag. And again,
bag.
I tried to pick.
We weren't talking about John, but wow, what a bag of tools we brought for you.
Well, I tried to pick stuff that I haven't heard anybody else talk about that, you know.
Now, and we'd appreciate you for it.
Absolutely. Now, a couple things. Dual authentication. I didn't hear the whole conversation. I was grabbing some things. But I ran into an issue on my phone where I was using Google Authenticator. Just want you guys to be aware of this. I reset my phone. Didn't think about the dual authentication I had set up for several different things. And thank God I was smart enough, because that's what I do, is I made the one-time passcodes that I could get into whatever, my Gmail, my I can't remember, LastPass, I had dual authentication on, a couple other products. And so I had the backup codes. And I actually had to use a couple of them because my phone basically was dying. I had to get a new one. And that's why everyone saw me with the Samsung VR. And basically, I got that for free. Not really, because I paid a lot of money for the stinking phone. So it really wasn't free, but hey, give me a piece of plastic with some glass in it. kids have a blast with it, whatever.
You got to be kind of careful with your Google account and second factor authentication, especially if you're locked into a lot of Google apps like Google Voice and Google. Because if you're using Google Voice for texting, this happened on some podcast, didn't it? One of Leo Laporte's, somebody, he turned on second factor authentication and then it locked him out of his Google Voice because he couldn't authenticate, but then he couldn't get the authentication because,
right,
you know, so he got locked in this little loop. So, you know, be careful when you're doing that. When you want to set up your initial authenticator, don't use your Google Voice as the text number. Use your cell phone, you know, or using an alternative authentication process like that. And definitely anytime you have the ability to do your temporary passcodes, Google will give you 10 at a time. Make sure you store those and keep those somewhere.
In a lot of
I think with what I'm experiencing on the security side now with all my corporate clients, if you're not using two factor, it's
Game over.
Yeah.
Game over.
Game over.
All right. So one thing that I have not heard since we kind of went into hardware about is the iFixit toolkit. Because you brought this up because you were talking about the other toolkit. And you like that, Velcro? 1969, baby. Anyways.
I'm sure people who can't stand Velcro just like cringe multiple times right now. Like, what?
So my toolkit has a zipper if you don't prefer, if you prefer non-Velcro options.
But mine sounds cooler, though. Wait, listen to this.
Okay, this is good television.
Got some musical stuff going on.
Anyways, there are a ton of tools in here. You're going to get your tweezers, your spoogers, your all kinds of stuff, your little suction cup, a anesthetic cable, which I have never used in my entire life, but people swear by them. So either I've been lucky or just, I don't know. But the main part of that that comes in, which I pulled out, is this little toolkit with all these little bits in there that you could use to take anything apart. It's got an extension where you can get in real nice and, small areas. The tool handle, in my opinion, is one of the best tool handles that I've seen. I didn't like the original from iFixit, but this one's got the little, basically you can grab it and kind of spin it while it's in your hand.
Yeah, they made a lot of improvements to that kit even over the past 2 years. Yep. And the price is only $70 now.
Exactly.
My tip on there is you can get it on Amazon. So use the Podnuts link. It's the same price.
Podnuts.com/Amazon.
If you do buy it from iFixit, make sure you do a Google search because you can find a discount code pretty easy.
Yep. And this little sucker is amazing. It looks like a little butter knife. It's very thin, but this is the, I can't remember what the name of that they actually call this. John will be able to tell me.
It is a Jimmy.
Jimmy. The iJimmy, right? And this thing can pull, there you go. It can pull off plastic without busting it, like your bezels around your screen. You can pull off glass. I mean, everything that you'd want to get into, the plastics on a laptop, phone, whatever. This little thing will get in there and get it out without busting things because it'll give you that just little bit of pressure inside. Yeah, go ahead.
Words are powerful. And Jimmy's got an extensive vocabulary. Slide, cut, twist. Poke, slice, part, uproot, divide, lift, dissect, separate, and pry. Woo-hoo. Whatever your word for opening up an electronic device, you can do it.
It's awesome.
Jimmy's the man.
I love it. What's that?
That comes in that toolkit.
Yeah. Yep.
The newer one, yes. The new version, yes.
Nice.
And I think the tool itself, even if you buy it by itself, I think it's like, what, $5? It's like $8
or $7 on their site.
It's
really nice. I mean, compared to this, kind of like I got this little cheap generic. It was just a bag full of them for like $5, and I use it to probably open the laptops and stuff without doing damage. It serves its purpose for the meanwhile.
And they're good. The nice thing about having a metal edge, believe it or not, you usually do less damage than you do with the plastic ones. Because the plastic ones, you get in there and you can. Now, plastic is good for some things, but when you're trying to pry or break that plastic piece loose from its connection, this thing will slide in. It slides in such the thinnest spots that all you're doing is prying up on it, and you're not scratching anything. You're not trying to get some of those plastic ones are a little bit thicker on the ends and stuff. So,
yeah. And I will say that of the pry tools that I've had, because like John had on that Tecton screwdriver kit, they have their little pry tool. But I've noted, but iFixit's pry tool, the way that the lip is, it's much more curved and it grabs onto things a lot better than any of the regular spoogers that are, I don't know what you call these things, but essentially these pry tools work a lot more better than any of the typical ones because the edges tend to get worn after a certain amount of time. These, because of the way that they're kind of folded over, last a lot longer.
And this is what comes in the Tecton kit. I mean, it works, but it's certainly not as substantial as the Jimmy.
Okay.
I mean, that Jimmy, you're right about that. I mean,
it's awesome.
No doubt. Victory there.
The other thing, too, is a lot of people don't realize this. They think, oh, I'll just go buy a cheap set of screwdrivers. And when you buy a cheap set of screwdrivers, a lot of times when you're wrenching on these little screws, what you'll end up doing is you'll end up tearing this head up. And if you actually get something that's quality like this, it'll go in there tight every time. And it, the thing you're going to strip is the head. Oh, we're getting some, Kurt, I think we got some static from you.
Uh-oh.
Might be a phone something or other coming in. Oh.
And so speaking to that about the stripped heads,
yeah.
I've had that problem. And what I had to do was purchase what's called van pliers. And these will grab the heads of the screws from the top. And actually, you can grip the heads and actually pull them out as if they were like regular pliers, and actually twist them off like if it was the screwdriver.
Oh, nice.
And these will actually work on the very small miniature ones that are behind those darn keyboards that have 40 of them. So they are made like crap sometimes. So this has helped me out multiple times. And I think it's like $22 or something like that. I found it on Amazon.
Very cool.
Am pliers.
Am pliers. Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, I think, man, we've covered a ton of things. I know John's got his hand is hurting just in typing all the links and putting all that stuff together for you guys. But I think we have covered plenty in the show as far as the tools we use, the tools other people use. So again, appreciate the emails and the information of why you use certain tools. It was very enlightening to me, and we were able to talk about some things. So let's go ahead, and I think we're going to end this show off. We're almost at an hour and 40 minutes, which is awesome, being the end of the show, end of the year. So let's start off with Kurt. Where can people find you at? I think you're muted.
Doctor.com.
There we go. All right.
Can you hear me? Okay. So it'll be mnpcdoctor.com for the website. It's Kurt at mnpcdoctor.com if they want to reach me by email. And then, of course, I got the MNPC Doctor on Facebook.
Awesome. Appreciate you coming out. And Kurt was on Podnets Daily not too long ago. So if you want to learn more about him, go check that episode out. And Mr. Paco LeBron, who has switched hats, I don't know how many times during the show, where can people find you at?
Actually, it's an inside out one. I kind of,
oh, okay. You know.
So you can find me here over in the, Podnuts Computer Repair live show every week at 3 PM Central Time. And you can also find me over at the Computer Business Podcast, over with my good friend co-hosting with, Matthew Rodella. One thing I did want to add, you're going to want to hear this week's episode, which should come out Tuesday or Wednesday. I haven't been able to reveal it the last 2 weeks, but there is a kind of a big announcement or so that I will be revealing once that episode is released. So Tuesday, Wednesday, we should have it out. Computer Business Podcast on all your local podcatchers.
It's for people that don't know, that was called a teaser. So yes. Definitely check that show out.
I remember those from college.
Oh boy, Waka, here we go again. Waka. Okay. And also, John Dubinsky, thanks for joining us again in all the stuff that you're doing with the notes there. But where can people find out more about you?
MavenGroup.net. I hope everybody has a Merry Christmas or a great celebration and however they choose to spend it with their family, friends. And I just hope it's a great one for everybody.
Awesome. Appreciate it. And I want to personally wish everyone a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, because we'll be gone for 2 weeks. But don't worry, we will be back, barring anything serious happening to me, which it won't. Anyways, come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnuts.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. We have audio available over at podnuts.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. Send your questions and feedback to podnuts@podnuts.com. You guys can still send your questions and feedback and show topic subjects to podnuts@podnuts.com for the next couple weeks. So we'll ramp up when we come back in 2017. You can leave a voicemail anytime, 24/7 at 1-888-697-0162. All right. If we have helped you out in any way, I would appreciate you going over to patreon.com/computer repair podcast, and you can give a little bit to support the show. All right. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.
All right, we are off air. Wow, I don't know what happened with my computer.
So you opted for the Samsung instead of the Pixel?
What's that?
You got a Samsung instead of a Google Pixel?
How do you know?
Because you have a VR.
Oh.
But aren't you still on Sprint?
Yeah.
Yeah, so isn't the Pixel not on Sprint? Is it a Verizon exclusive?
I think so.
It is a Verizon exclusive. Yes, I did look at that, John, for a brief moment. But the reality is I needed a phone. So,
In reality,
this is a very expensive $429 phone. That's all I can tell you. So,
looks nice. Are you enjoying it?
Actually, I love it. I didn't realize what I was missing with my LG G3. It's a night and day difference. And I'll tell you what. The number one thing is the stupid thumbprint or a fingerprint reader.
On the back?
No.
It's on the front.
Whoops.
Oh, jeez. You just cracked it already.
Of course, I didn't have my case on it. Because it was in the VR.
It has the edge, so that has glass all around it. Oh, man.
Yeah. Fortunately.
Did they tell me it just didn't break?
No, it didn't. It hit the plastic keyboard. But anyways, the little button right there is a fingerprint reader.
Oh, that's such a pain. It's like the iPhone.
No, it works beautifully.
Really?
It works. It works 100% of the time.
I like the Nexus better, but the one on the back. I prefer that versus than the front.
Okay. I can see that.
Yeah, that's what I have on my Nexus too.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
I would like it better on the front, Paco. But you're right. I like it better on the back.
Yeah, because I have both, and I prefer it on the back because it's seamless. I got the phone, boom, it's in. Like, I can hit that one a lot faster to get into all my other apps that use the fingerprint versus the Touch ID on the iPhone.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, my HTC is the same way. It's right on the front.
Okay.
So you just hit it, and this unlocks it for me.
Now, what I really like about it, though, is I like that you can actually also open apps that have passwords on them with your fingerprint.
Yep.
Like LastPass. I don't have. Yep. Oh, I'm telling you. I was like, wow. Yep. What a night and day.
Welcome
difference.
To the 90s.
I'm telling you. Well, I had, you know, here's a funny thing, right? My LG G3 is only 2 years old. Okay. And it came out. I mean, in the technology at that time was fine, but they tried to sell me the regular Samsung, not the Edge. And I just didn't want to go with a smaller screen. Now it's 0.4 inches, or the regular Samsung S7 is 0.4 inches smaller, which is 400 thousandths. But anyways, my LG G3 was 5.5 inches. So I didn't want to go smaller. I actually wanted to go bigger. I wanted the LG V20, but they wanted way too much. It was like $800 and some odd for that phone. I'm like, no.
What?
Yeah. $33 a month, 2 years. Mm-hmm. So they had
the S7.
What's that?
Or is that the
this is
the S7 or the Note?
This is the S7 Edge.
Okay.
Yeah, not
I never got into the Samsung products. I love their TVs and stuff. I just don't care for their phones.
Now, this is the
HTC for a while.
This is the second Samsung phone I've owned, and it's every bit as good as the other one was. Now, the other one was, you know, Samsung, what was it? S3 or something like that.
Okay.
Back in the day.
The AAA batteries.
AAA batteries. Oh man.